dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal or will force to be equaled, whether they like it or not. Oh, system, Zog, you are creating a monster. You are truly creating a monster. It's like fucking Jason Friday the 13th. No, I did not see that movie. I won't go see that movie. I despise horror movies because it's always beautiful white women that are getting butchered. Fuck horror movies. But system, Zog, you are creating a monster because if the white race does go the way of the dinosaur, it's not going to be a perfect world for you. You may have a global plantation and black, brown, and yellow will be your serfs and your slaves. But you're cutting your own throat. Don't think for a second that this world of mud is going to stand by and let some white-skinned Jews and white sellouts run the global plantation. You're creating a monster. And by eliminating the white race, you are slashing your own throat. And that's the kind of America you're creating. You have all these talking heads like Robert Kennedy back in the 60s talking about we must help out Appalachia, the hidden America. Every time they put a face on poverty in America, it's always some black kid's face. Last Friday, they had a story on Channel 7, I think it was 2020, called Hidden America, The Children of the Mountains. And it's talking about Appalachia. And for you people who live in Europe and Australia, Appalachia is really where the term hillbilly comes from. It encompasses a large chunk of Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia. The poorest of the poor of America live in Appalachia. And, you know, they just did a lot. I mean, the health of the people there, I mean, it is just terrible. You know, big corporations like Mountain Dew, I mean, they must be raking in millions of dollars because the people are just, I mean, from young kids to adults are hooked on Mountain Dew. It's like liquid crack to these people. I mean, the poorest of the poor. They did a story on this one kid who was a badass football player, white kid. I mean, just running down the fucking football field, jumping over players. I mean, just, you know, you look at this kid and you're like, oh man, he's gotta be black. And then when he pulls off his helmet, oh shit, he's white. You know, I mean, that's how just agile and athletic this kid was. Sean Grimm, his name was. And he gets a scholarship to go to a pretty good university in Kentucky. Gets to the school. He can't afford books. He can't afford food. And the schooling that he got in Appalachia did not prepare him to take college courses. Because he didn't have money for food or books, well, he had to come home. Poor ass kid. You'll find him on the side of the highway digging coal out of the side of the hill just so he can bring it home and either try to sell it or try to use it. America, you have abandoned two-thirds of the people who live below the poverty line in this country, and they are white. That is a demographic fact that is being conveniently shoved down the memory hole. Two-thirds of all people, regardless of race, in America who live below the poverty line are white. And a good chunk of them live in this part of the country. You're nothing but a dog and pony show, Washington, D.C. That's all you are. Transnational cap or transnational or capital to transnational corporations. I plagiarized that term from Metzger. You know, but think about this. All the movers and shakers of the 20th century, J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, all these guys, they attained what they went after by stepping outside the bounds of law and order. They went by their own rules. And here we are, too many of us white people, who have the moral high ground in what we're fighting for. We're not wrong. Don't fall for this Jewish propaganda you see on TV. You know, I mean, you know, if you see a racist on TV, he's going to be some whack job talking about lynching niggers and, you know, some other bullshit. You won't see a guy like Tom Metzger on MSNBC or C-SPAN. Dog and pony show. He needs to come down. Come down hard. too many white people in this country are just inundated with bullshit ideologies. You know, I came across a saying from Nietzsche. Nietzsche says faith, as in faith in God, faith means not wanting to know what is true. I thought that was interesting, because that's exactly what I see. Being an exile of Christianity, as I am. But the system, I mean, they use this double talk. They have this dog and pony show going on our TV screens, and they create this bullshit image of what reality is, and it's all fake. And you know what? It's mostly white people that are duped by this shit. White people have the propensity to believe in good of people. Well, maybe we need to change that. I mean, that was a good characteristic of us, for us to survive as a race, but now that we're mixed with a bunch of human scum, we need to maybe change that about ourselves. I was watching a crime show the other day, a crime documentary, and it was about the United Freedom Fund. Back in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, they were a leftist domestic terrorist group, is what they're called. I don't think that they were racist, but they were all white. All the guys that went on trial were white. And there were women in this group, and they were hardcore. And, you know, they started out as the Jonathan Jackson Sam Melville organization, and then they changed to the United Freedom Fund. You know, they did what they did. They, you know, bombed some installations. They robbed banks, did all kinds of stuff. And at the end, you had this FBI talking head on. And he says they're nothing but criminals. You know, they claim to be revolutionaries, but they're nothing but, you know, criminals, or nothing but, you know, just a dregs of society or whatever. And it's funny how, you know, the system will do that. The system will demonize anything in its opposition. That tactic is as old as the freaking crust on the earth, man. And we fought for it. But yet, you know, what does the system do to clean up their image when they're doing something? You know? When the CIA kidnaps someone to interrogate them, oh, that's not called an interrogation, that's called a rendition. Oh, that's what that is. You know, they have all these nice-sounding words to cover up the shit that they do when they, you know, violate people's civil rights. Every institution in the system are hypocrites. And they are they're self-appointed masters. They're like our puppet masters, you know? And too many of the white race, you know, prance and dance across the TV screen and in life on Main Street like marionettes. You know, they gotta have that certain type of car. They gotta have that style of clothing, Eddie Bauer, Tommy Hilfiger, whatever. They got to look a certain way. Listen, if you want to look a certain way so you blend in for a mission, more power to you. Go for broke, I say. But if you fall for this materialism, you're being duped. They had Eckhart Tolle on TV the other day. He's a German guy. He's basically the new philosopher of the age. Oprah loves him. And he basically said, in order to find happiness in this life, you gotta shut off your mind. Are you fucking kidding me? You know, my family members come down on me. It's kind of like in the same mindset. You know, it's like, I have to, you know, because I'm a very unhappy person. That's just how I am. I mean, I wish I could be like Tom Metzger. He sees all this world of shit, but he's a glass half full kind of guy. And I really respect that about him. I'm a little bit envious of him for that, but I'm not wired that way. You know, I see negativity everywhere. You know, and I don't think I'm as wired and tight as John Jewell or anyone like that. And if he's still active, well, God bless you. But, I'm just not wired like that. And, you know, I can't, you know, they come down on me and they're like, you gotta do something about you. I'm like, no, I gotta do something about society. It's society that makes me unhappy. Why should I change me? You know, it's kind of like the Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. You know, when someone feels upset, they want to medicate themselves with Soma, if you remember that story. But he says, shut off the mind. The one point he made, which I thought was a little profound, he says, people are so agitated and annoyed at the present because they're in such a hurry to get to where they're going. People are, you know, impatient being in college because they just want to get on the job and start making money. And in a way, we ghost wolves can tap into that kind of that profound statement. You know, don't wait. You know, if you see a target of opportunity, and you can interpret that any way you want to, you know, because all this stuff that I'm saying, you know, about, you know, the last show when I said targeting churches with Spanish fuck languages and all that was for a book that I'm writing, and that's like one of the plots I'm working on. But really, it's for Chinese occupation. Yeah, that stuff's coming, man. You know, and don't tell me it's not a Santa Claus. So, but he said the people are annoyed at the present because they're too impatient to get to the future. Very interesting. You know, if you see something that needs to be done and you have the opportunity to do it, do it. And if it's something that's very influential in a lone wolf kind of way, well, it'll be even harder for the system to find out what happened because it was a spur-of-the-moment thing. Things that happen randomly in a spur-of-the-moment are very hard to solve. It's stuff that requires a lot of planning, believe it or not, that has some downfalls to it. And there's a trade-off. I mean, you should do some research when you go in there. But that's why all of you guys should walk miles every day. Get to know the area you live in. But if you're too well-known in that area because of your racial activities, you better get to know another area real well. That's far from home. Okay? All right, let's talk about some things here. You know, I ran across a statement the other day. It said a man's greatness is measured by how much it takes to discourage him. That was kind of convicting because, as I just said, I'm a glass half empty kind of guy. But I thought of Tom Metzger when I heard that statement. That's exactly something that describes him, you know. But I've changed. I've told you guys that before. I've changed drastically. And people who've known me for years can't even get it across their minds that I'm not the same person anymore. When I first joined Temple Karate in 96, or a few years later, roughly around the year 2000, when I was a purple belt, or I was either a purple belt or a blue belt, and I ran it, you know, I made friends with this guy who joined the school, and he's still my friend today. You know, he's not as racially aware as I am, and I wouldn't trust him with pertinent information, but, you know, the guy's been there for me, so I still call him friend. But he's clueless about how much I've changed. Clueless. A couple years ago, he bought me a book for my birthday, Band of Brothers by Stephen Ambrose. Out of all the shit I've been talking about, fucking World War II, the gas chambers, the fucking, you know, how I'm not a guy to really talk bad about the Nazis. But, you know, I've changed a little bit these days. I mean, I'm not too happy about some of the decisions Hitler made. But, you know, you don't hear me talk shit about the Wehrmacht. No way. Or the Luftwaffe. No, they were the best in the world. They were just outnumbered by 50 fucking nations. But this guy, clueless, to buy me a book like that. You know, when he gave it to me, I was like, oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. You know, and I think it was a day later, I don't know whether I chucked it in the garbage or I just threw it in the library book depository. I didn't fucking want it. I want to read it. Every time it comes on History Channel, I turn it off. Fuck Band of Brothers. Fuck Stephen Ambrose. The only book that he wrote that was worth anything was the Undaunted Courage, when he talked about the Lewis and Clark expedition. Them were some studs. What's his name? Meriwether Lewis and William Clark? Them guys were some freaking studs. I'm afraid, I fear that maybe that type of white man is gone, or that type of white man sucked up by the system, and now these white studs are being used in law enforcement and other institutions that are enemies of the white race. We need that type of people in the resistance, definitely. All right, let's talk about some things here. I want to talk about maintaining your night vision, okay? Now, guys, I told you guys before that I heard LASIK damages night vision permanently, that you can lose 30% of your night vision. I saw an ad the other day that says it improves night vision. I don't know what the fuck to believe now. So some of you guys are savvy about research or whatever. Find out for us about LASIK. I mean, does it hurt night vision? Does it help it? And maybe write up a thing, put it in the airing update. Not the airing update, but the news and views. But maintaining your night vision, you're on an op, okay? And you're in a covered, concealed position, like a ditch, dried up creek bed, a grove of bushes, and you see headlights coming. Do not look directly at the headlights, especially if you have to escape and evade through a dark forest. You want to maintain night vision. If you have to look at those headlights to see if that's your target vehicle occupied by Chinese soldiers, you know, you want to make sure you at least close one eye. And you should be wearing some kind of hat that has like a brim on it, like a baseball hat, you know, so you can just put your brim down a little bit, but you can still put the brim right under the lights, but yet you can still see the bottom of the car. You know what I'm talking about. So maintain your night vision. Always be cognizant of that. There's a knife magazine, a knife catalog magazine called Bud K. And I recommend you guys buying a lot of knives from them because they're real cheap. They're throwaway knives. If you need it in self-defense, if you use a knife during self-defense, let's say you're attacked by a Chinese occupation soldier, well, you don't want to get caught with that knife. You need to get rid of it. Okay? Water does a lot of damage to things that are metal. But if it's stainless steel, it's not. So, if you buy blades from Bud K, buy tactical blades. Blades that are black. If you're in a situation, you got to defend yourself. If you have a bright, shiny, stainless steel blade, well, your adversary is going to know what he's up against. In order to enhance the element of surprise, always carry black blades, man, because you don't know what, you know, if you're in a dark street or an alley, he's not going to know what you have in your hands. He may think you're just flailing away at him. All of a sudden he gets caught, and then you get thrown in surprise, because you always knew you had a blade. If you buy swords, let's say you want to buy a sword or a battle axe for a home defense weapon, paint them black, okay? But make sure you put a thin strip of tape over the edge. You don't want to really paint the edge of the blade, okay? You don't want any paint on it, because you want it to stay sharp, okay? So, tactical blades. You should have nothing but tactical blades. No shiny blades no more. Your blades have to be black. You know, and if you have this knife and you love it, but it's a shiny stainless steel blade, well, fucking paint it. Do something. I was watching an episode of Most Shocking last night, and, it was an episode about brawls and riots and gang fights and stuff. Stuff that was caught on a video camera, either somebody filming it or was caught on a camera that's a surveillance or a department store or a bank or something. You know, and they would show these gang fights in the United States and in the UK. And every time they showed something like that from Russia or Poland or some other Eastern European country, the Russian guys and the Polish guys, they always kick. They always kick. Whereas the Americans and the Brits, all they do is just throw a bunch of haymakers. They're all headhunters. Don't do that in the fight. Don't be a headhunter. You got plenty of targets below the belt. You got the midsection. You know, switch it up. If you're the kind of guy, you're in a fight and you're just trying your best to punch him in the head, you know, chances are things could go wrong for you. So mix up your strikes. You know, you could punch in the head and follow it up with a kick to the shins or something. You know, just mix it up high, low, high, low. But these Russians, you know, it just proves what I've always suspected. I believe that kickboxing is just part of Russian culture now. You know, sambo, which is the Russian grappling art, which is pretty brutal, bone-breaking. But the Russians always kick, I just saw this brawl last night in this Russian department store, and these three Russian security guards for the department store, took on like six guys. And man, these guys could fucking fight. I mean, even the thugs, you know, were throwing kicks and using proper form when fighting. I mean, I'm telling you, man, I have nothing but good feelings for the Russians, man. Maybe, like Kipling said, you know, it's salvation of the white race will come from Russia. Okay, I saw another show yesterday. There was this bank robber, okay? This fucking guy, I mean, he was carjacking people and just using he was a white guy, and just using a bunch of over-the-top violence just to obtain the car. I guess the guy, just he had a tragedy in his life, and the guy just went off. But what I thought was interesting is that he would steal a car in one jurisdiction, then he would go steal a plate off a car off another jurisdiction, put it on his stolen car. He would rob a bank in a separate jurisdiction. Now there's three jurisdictions so far. Then he would ditch the car in another jurisdiction. But when he ditched it, he left the keys to the car on the driver's seat at the window now. So what would end up happening, the car would get re-stolen, you know, and the thieves would drive around with it, destroying all kinds of forensic evidence. So this guy was like a nightmare, because most jurisdictions, I mean, they only know really what's going on in their jurisdiction. I know law enforcement's trying to change that. But I want to tell you guys about this, you know, under Chinese occupation, there's not going to be any jurisdictions, okay? All right. Read a little story on the internet the other day about Richard Speck. Richard Speck in 1966 was a merchant marine. He was in town in Chicago, and I guess he came across a townhouse full of nurses, seven nurses. He went in there, seven or eight, and he went in there and he raped one of them, but he killed all seven of them. Now, a couple things Richard Speck did wrong. When he got in the area, he left his bags, like his merchant marine bag, at this gas station. He said, hey, buddy, can you watch this for me? I missed my boat. I was supposed to, you know, catch a barge down to Louisiana and get some work. But he missed it. Now, when he murdered these nurses, there was one nurse who survived, a Filipino girl by the name of Cora. I don't know if that's her first name or last name. I don't remember. But this is a classic case of what I've been talking about. These girls get a knock on their door, the guy forcefully enters the apartment, and he rounds up all the white girls, but the Filipino girls, the one who had sense, don't go hide underneath the bed. Just like I've said before, it seems like the third world, as much as we don't want them around, are at least more in tune with the natural world than we are. This Filipino girl knew something was wrong. She sensed danger enough for her to go hide. And she was the only survivor. She gave a description of the guy. He was 6 feet tall, he had blonde hair, he spoke with a southern drawl. Then the police canvassed the neighborhood, and they come across the gas station. Hey, we're looking for this guy about this description. And the guy ran the gas station. Oh, yeah, I know this guy. And they got his bags, and one thing led to another. And plus, he had a tattoo, born to raise hell, that was easily identifiable. That's why you don't get tattoos, guys. Or if you do anything, make sure all your tattoos are covered up. If you got tattoos on the back of your head or the back of your neck, wear a bandana. Buy one of them nigger drive-on rags. You know those rags that black people wear to keep their hair tight and the material drapes down the back of their neck? Come on, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen it before. I actually got one of those. I tried it out one time. You know, I had to get rid of it, though. I didn't feel right wearing it. But you ghost wolves out there, that's a good piece of article. Make sure you wear that with a ball cap cocked to the left or right so you look like a wigger, okay? But this Cora, this Filipino girl, just another classic case about how they're in touch with the natural world. I wonder if Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom, if they were more in touch with the natural world, if maybe they would have fought like the Dickens to keep themselves from being carjacked by them scum niggers, you know? Think about that. Don't ever think that if you're abducted by some niggers, they're going to show you mercy later. when a white person begs for their life to a fucking shit-skinned nigger, it's like an aphrodisiac to them. It makes them, you know, excited. You're exciting them more. So, be in touch with the natural world. I was reading a story about a British counterfeiter the other day. Last name of Jory. I forgot what his first name was. Maybe Richard, maybe Benjamin. Benjamin Jory. But, this guy was an awesome counterfeiter. And, he had the fucking the British police and the MI5 and the royal family up in arms with the... I mean, he was just counterfeiting some good stuff, man. But, one of the ways that he would... one of the techniques he would use for counter-surveillance, he had at least 3 to 4 cars positioned throughout the town he lived in. I don't know if it was London or Leeds or Manchester. I forgot what British town it was. But he had cars stashed all over the fucking city. And every time he would go somewhere, he would not drive car A, you know, the first car, and drive it to his destination. He would drive it to a place, park it, maybe run down an alley or a side street to his other car, get in the second car. And, I mean, he would use, he had 4 cars and 2 motorcycles he would use. And wherever he went somewhere, like to deliver money, deliver paper that they're going to use for counterfeit or fresh bills, I mean, he... You know, people would buy his counterfeit money, and he would get real stacks of real British pounds. And any time he traveled anywhere in the commission of his activities, he would use all 6 of these vehicles. He never varied from that. And this guy stayed at large, you know, for forever. But the police were snooping around his garage one day, and they found strips of waste paper, the type of paper that currency's made on. And the gig was up from them. They had enough for a search warrant. They went in and they busted the guy. And, actually the story is on this show called Masterminds. If you ever see it, watch it, because it's very interesting. These guys were sharp, man. Okay. There was also a crew of guys that were going around to the casinos in Las Vegas. I think they did it in New Jersey also and around the country. But they had this device. They had a light that they would stick up the slot machines, you know, and they had a couple of associates standing around the slot machine so the camera couldn't see what they were doing. You know, they found ways around that now. But what I thought was interesting, they would use this light to get the slot machines to register a win. And these guys made over a period of years like $4.5 million. You know, these guys were a tight crew. But here's what they did that I thought was interesting. They never used any hotels in the Las Vegas area. They didn't want to leave any hotel paper trails. So they traveled around in an RV. How innocent looking is an RV? You see an RV on the road? The last thing you're going to think is in that RV are a bunch of white insurgents. You know, I just, remember, always treat your vehicle or buy the vehicle that would best exploit the Trojan horse tactic. Okay, I thought that was real interesting. They were able to travel around, going to all these casinos, and there's not one record of them staying at any of their hotels, which made it even harder for the police and the hotel, or not in the hotel, but the casino security to find them. Very interesting. Okay, let's talk about training here. Okay, now I hope you guys are training. I hope you guys are knife sparring. I hope you guys are researching knife fighting techniques and tactics, you know. If you guys aren't afraid to get your name on a list, dial and press, do whatever kind of research you can to find the guy named Kelly Warden. He's a guy up in Washington State. I think somewhere around Federal Way, which is a suburb of Seattle or Tacoma, I'm not sure. I think it's Tacoma. And he is the first, maybe the only, but definitely the first white person in the world to be given the rank of master by some high knife fighting muckety muck in the Philippines. I mean, when this guy goes to the Philippines, I mean, he's like a fucking celebrity. That's just how much of a badass he is. But definitely research this guy, Kelly Warden. And I learned a lot of stuff from him, and I was able to apply it in my when I was training in Kempo, when I was training in Jeet Kune Do. And but one thing you want to do when you want to train, you want to spar real nice. Don't do shit like that. I want to add an element of realism to it. No, don't do that. Okay, get some training blades, some training blades that won't do any damage when you impact someone's hand or someone's arm or their chest or whatever. You know, they got these training implements you can get through Century Magazine, a martial arts catalog for martial arts supplies. And, you know, if you want to use the rubber knives, fine. If you want to add a little bit of pain influence there, you know, because you want to be able to not get hurt, even if it's a wooden knife or a rubber knife, you know, it'll make you, give you more incentive to get out of the way, okay? But they have also these foam padded knives with like a piece of plastic to them. Use short training knives to spar. Don't use long training knives. Chances are you're not going to have a long knife on the street. Train with short training knives because you're able to judge your distance. You got to work a little bit harder to get your cuts. And then if you find yourself on the street with a long knife, well, man, you're just going to eat this guy up because you're so used to working with a short knife. Train with a knife that's got like no more than a 2-inch blade on it. So you can make this up your own. You know, you can find maybe a piece of wood and just duct tape the hell around it, and it's only like maybe 5 to 6 inches long, and you got 2 inches sticking out the one end, whether you train reverse grip or standard grip. So always knife train with short blades. Okay, let's talk about isometrics. Isometrics are actually internal resistance exercises. And if you was to train heavily in isometrics every day, you might get a good-looking physique. But what isometrics does, it strengthens like the tendons that go from the muscle to the bone and muscle to muscle. And it makes the isometric exercises make you incredibly strong. I remember training with this one guy when I was in Kempo. This guy was skinny as hell. You know, he's like 5'5", white guy, an Italian guy, actually. And every time I work with this guy, it's like I felt like I was working with a guy who was 6'3", 300 pounds, and could bench press, like, you know, an amazing amount of weight. And I had to ask him, I'm like, dude, why the fuck are you so goddamn strong? And he said, well, I would use an isometric exercise. Like, I would stand in like a what they call a bow and arrow stance, and that's like where you're like your left leg's forward and your right leg's to the rear, and your left leg is bent enough to almost make a 90-degree. And he said he would go through the motions of like he's pulling a rope, like he's in a tug of war. And he would just hand over hand, and he would just tense up all his muscles in his back and in his chest and in his arms, and he would just go through these motions real slow, breathing in real deep, breathing out real deep. And just that exercise alone. You know, but you can also like make like your bench pressing, or make sure like you're just doing a military press with a dumbbell, but have no weight in your hands. Just go through the motions and just tense up all your muscles and go slow. That's isometrics. You know, where you're actually using muscles in your body to fight against other muscles. Okay, that's called internal resistance exercise. Isometrics. Incorporate these into your training more than anything to make you incredibly strong. And if you're a guy who's like, you know, 160 pounds and you're 5'9", and someone messes with you, dude, it's gonna shock their world when you grab them. You'll really notice it after about anywhere from 3 to 6 months. You'll notice your strength getting up there, and it's good for the hands too. You always want to strengthen your hands. You don't know if you may need to choke out a Chinese occupation soldier. And the last show, I don't know if I talked about paintball training. I don't remember because I haven't heard it on the internet yet. But if I didn't, you can practice a lot of your tactics and techniques, move through the woods, shoot, move, and communicate by paintball training or airsoft training. Okay, let's talk about what shoes to buy. You know, Nike's not bad shoes as long as they're black. I remember one time I was in with this guy, and this is a long time ago, and we were like, we did something, okay? I'm not going to say what we did, but we were fucking escaping, evading, right? And, you know, like I said, said before, when I hop a fence, I usually do it at an intersection, at a T intersection or a corner. You know, because I just find it easier to get over the fence. But I was with a guy who had decent running shoes on, but his toes wouldn't fit in the chain link fence. Don't buy big square toes, no matter how good they feel on your feet. Buy a shoe that you at least, you know, stick in somewhat in the holes of a fence, okay? Make sure they're black and make sure they're rubber-soled shoes. You don't want to be wearing big, heavy boots during an op during the summer or spring. Not unless you anticipate. Well, no, not even if there's a lot of mud you got to go through, or streams or rivers or anything like that. You should still have a light boot on, but maybe something a little bit more sturdy because of that terrain. But if all your activity is going to take place in an urban area, rubber-soled tennis shoes during the spring, winter, and fall months, summer and fall months. But when winter comes around, you may have to switch up your foot gear there. One technique I used one time, this is a long time ago, like I said, so I would purposely arrange my route. I didn't have any real covered and concealed route. Didn't have any railroad tracks I could get from point A to point B. I didn't have any trails, any streams, any fields. So I coordinated that I would walk down only one-way streets. Okay, because people, I find it easier to, if I'm limited to streets, if I've walked down one-way streets, I can see what's coming at least a block ahead. But I kind of periodically look behind me to see what kind of traffic is on the streets that cross my one-way street. So use one-way streets. I mean, you can see what's coming a block away, and you can conveniently cut up one of the, you know, walkways to a house and either hide in the bushes or cut through the yard and go down the alley and then cut through another yard, and you know, you can go three, four streets over just by cutting through yards. So, you know, think about one-way streets. They're a good way to do what you gotta do. Okay, there's this guy in my neighborhood, and when this guy walks around, he always has a trench coat on, and he's a white guy. He's like one of the few that's left. And there's a young guy, too. He looks like he's in his 20s. And I see him like going to the 7-Eleven, and he's always buying a couple 40 ounces of beer, and he's in terrible shape. But I don't know, he strikes as one of these dirty white guys, probably plays Dungeons and Dragons. But he always wears a trench coat and a Crocodile Dundee hat. I don't know, I mean, most of the time he dresses in black. But, you know, make observations about who's who in your neighborhood and who's setting patterns to dress a certain way. If you need to do a little ghost wolf black op, and I was thinking about this the other day, I said, if I had to do something in this neighborhood, if I was forced to do something in this neighborhood, I would wear a Crocodile Dundee hat, I would wear some black clothes, maybe put some padding around my midsection because this guy is a little overweight, and I'd wear a black trench coat. And I was walking behind him the other night. I was just maybe half a block away. And I was just watching the way he walks, trying to imitate his gait, trying to imitate his walk, you know? I mean, as long as I don't go in an establishment, you know what I mean, and get on any surveillance cameras to see that it's really not this guy. But this guy always wears that. And if you need a good disguise, copy people like that. And those will be all over him. Hey, man, we heard that those guys wearing a Crocodile Dundee hat and a black trench coat. Oh, I see that guy all the time. He always goes to 7-Eleven to buy fucking 40-ounce Mickeys or whatever. You know, I'm just, you know, make observations like that. Pay attention to detail. I was in a situation 2 days ago. I went in a library. You know, and I'm looking at some things, looking at some of the newspapers there, seeing what kind of headlines would make good for a ghost wolf show. You got to pay attention to the hairs in the back of your neck. Pay attention to that shit. If you feel like you're being watched, chances are you are being watched. Remember, paranoia is not anything bad. It's an ultra form of awareness. Okay? I just had this feeling someone was watching me. And I didn't look around. I didn't get up and start looking around furtively. I just felt I knew I was being watched. And I looking up casually, and finally I found the guy that was staring at me. And sure enough, he was staring right at me. He's an older guy, about 50, 55 years old or so. I'm like, what the fuck's his problem? You know, I didn't give him too much of a hard look back. I just, you know, basically I'm checking his position. I used the body language like I wasn't concerned he was staring at me. I was more preoccupied with my own personal business in the library. So I had to go read something that I had in my pocket. I wanted a private place to read it. So I went in the bathroom. Went in the answer that phone. So I went in the stall. And then I went in the stall and I sat on the commode and started reading what I was reading. Usually I use stalls like that. For one, if I'm going to be jumped in the bathroom, the stall provides a nice barrier, okay? And I've trained in a lot of fighting arts that, you know, that goes by the philosophy of, if it doesn't work in a phone booth, throw it out. You know, because that's real fighting, in close fighting, clinch range. Work on your clinch when you guys train. You know, elbows, knees, headbutts, you know, stuff like that. Eye gouges, biting, kicks to the shins, knee to the groins, kick to the groin, okay? Don't forget eye gouging. Real quick, though, is three things you want to pay attention to when you're faced off on an enemy. If he can't see, he can't fight. If he can't breathe, he can't fight. That means you hit him in the throat. And if he can't stand, he can't fight. Meaning you gave him a good swift kick to the shins or you stepped on his metatarsal bones. But anyways, I'm in this commode and I'm reading something. And someone comes into the urinal right next to the commode. It's like, you know, like 20 seconds after I get in, it could have been anyone. I don't know. It could have been anyone. Could have been a librarian. I don't know. So I'm looking at the shoes from underneath the partition there. And I made note of the shoes. And I just sat there just watching his shoes, just watching him. I wasn't too concerned with reading what I was reading. So he left, walked out of the bathroom. I put whatever I was reading inside my pocket, and I walked out. And I'm casually strolling around the library, this guy. And sure enough, the shoes I saw underneath the partition were his shoes, the guy that was initially staring at me. Now, what was that? I don't know. Could have been an FBI tail. Could have been anything. Okay? I mean, FBI tailing me does not concern me in the least, okay? Because I've gotten pretty good at being able to shake a tail, I think. You know? If they want to spend resources to watch me, fine. You know? There's real threats out there. I'm not a threat, FBI, until they come under Chinese occupation. And don't tell me there's not a Santa Claus. But guys, pay attention to detail. I share these last two stories so you will pay attention to detail. Okay. Pay attention to detail who's in your neighborhood. Maybe you can copy someone and pay attention to just stuff going on around you. I was on one of my night walks the other night, and I was on the west side of this very busy street. And I'm like, if I'm going to escape and evade, I need to get across this street. And I want to minimize anyone seeing me. I found this railroad trestle that went over the bridge, and went over the road. So I got on these tracks about a block away, and I'm walking by all these houses, but you know, they're pretty dark. Always checking behind me, making sure the train traffic's not coming. And when I came up to this road, I basically looked behind me, make sure there's no train traffic, looked up ahead, make sure there's no train traffic. I don't care if there's the headlight of a train three stops ahead of you. I'm not going to do it, because what if something caused me to freeze all moving on top of those tracks? I don't want a fucking train bearing down on me, okay? So I had no train traffic to the head or in front of me, and basically bear crawled, keeping a very low profile, went over this road. Went about a block east of this real busy road, then I got off the tracks. Think about that if you need to escape and evade. Don't run across a busy street if you're escaping and evading. If there's a way over it or under it, use that. Because it can be just you going across the street, either you're running or walking, and somebody sees you. Okay? Could be undercover police. Could be Chinese roving patrols. Right? And don't tell me there's not an Easter Bunny. So, railroad trestles make a good way to cross a busy street. Okay, I'm going to say something here, and I know when I say it, you guys are going to be like, man, you saw that on that show Lie to Me yesterday that was on Fox, that movie with Tim Roth, who plays a British guy who's helping the American law enforcement how to read facial features and stuff like that. This had absolutely nothing to do with lie detector equipment. You know, and this show is filled with a bunch of fucking race mix. It's a white girl marrying a Korean guy, black Secret Service agent hitting on this Hispanic girl who works for Timothy Roth. Fucking, I mean, you're going to see all this shit all the time now. But they use an interesting word that I remember reading about called microexpressions. Microexpressions are pretty much, they cross ethnic boundaries, they cross languages. I mean, I guess there's a commonality in all microexpressions that point to latent violence. I guess there's a certain thing that we do with our eyes that's pretty much characteristic of most human beings before we're about to do something. And the reason why I share this, and this show is not based on bullshit. I mean, it's the bullshit plot and this and that, but the stuff they talk about are real. You know, certain things we do with our body when we're lying, certain things we do with our eyelids when we flutter them and stuff like that. I've read about that stuff. So I've read about that stuff written by guys who conducted interrogations and, you know. But you guys need to read up about that stuff, man. Microexpressions and anything like that. And train yourself that if you're on an op, so don't have this hard wood face. I talked about that a couple of shows ago. Especially if you're coming up on a mark, someone you need to dispatch for extreme prejudice, like a Chinese soldier, you know? You don't want a hard look on your face. Practice that. Practice having a soft look on your face right before you attack. And even, you know, train with your training partner and try to keep a light, happy-go-lucky look on your face while you guys are sparring, you know? Train your body. You can train your body to do anything. You know, I was talking with Tom Metzger off the air last night. I called him up. I wanted to talk to him about something. And, you know, he says his sciatica's acting up and stuff like that. And he said, you know, my attitude is, you know, a lot of times I just say, fuck it. Fuck you, pain. I'm going to walk miles and miles. I don't care about you, pain. that's what Tom said. And maybe that's why he's the head of our Insurgency Radio Network. He's fucking hardcore-ass son of a bitch, you know? But he's right, because you never know when you're going to find yourself in a situation where you have to walk for miles in pain, okay? So when you guys train, when you guys do whatever, try to ignore the pain. I mean, if you got a hyperextended knee, or if you got a busted back or something like that, you know, seek medical attention and, you know, maybe cease training if you get hurt. But if it's just muscle pain, you know, you got a Charlie horse in your thigh from a leg kick or something like that, fight through it. You know, that's what these UFC fighters have mastered. They've mastered the art of pain compliance. Their pain tolerance has so skyrocketed through the years of training that, you know, I've seen these guys take leg kicks that I know that if I took one of those on the street, I'd be down for the count. Pain tolerance. Increase your pain tolerance. And Metzger's absolutely right about that. If you get pain like that, try to work through it. Builds character, it toughens you up. And you do what you gotta do. Now, you know what, guys? I would do anything to infect a spirit of militarism, militancy, and pan-Aryanism in our thing. I am a huge advocate of pan-Aryanism. I want it to take off. I really do. And I will do anything, almost anything, even at the risk of sounding like a moron, to bring you guys to that type of spirit, if I could. During the whole time when I was in the Army, I was the only white soldier for years. I've never even seen this in recent times. You know, I've been through some Army bases and watched, you know, Army formations that were marching or running, and I've never, never seen a white soldier under the rank of sergeant call cadence. When I was stationed in Fort Hood, Texas, I just had a natural rhythm about me, maybe because all those years I was in a band. You know, I used to write a lot of my own cadences. You know, they were all, I mean, I wasn't racially aware back then. I suppressed that stuff. They were all anti-communist stuff like that, my cadences. You know, there's nothing for a black sergeant to call me out in front of a formation. Private Mayor, get outside the formation and call cadence. You know, and that's just the way it was. Call some cadence for you guys. I'm going to take Army cadence and put racial lines to them. Take something sacred to the Army and turn it back on them for you guys. Liza Jane, little Liza Jane. Ain't no sense in calling home, little Liza Jane. Feds are tapping all your phones, little Liza Jane. Ain't no sense in looking back, little Liza Jane. Feds are preparing to attack, little Liza Jane. Whoa, little Liza Jane. Time has come to make your move, little Liza Jane. Think of all that you've been through, little Liza Jane. Do not even shake with fear, little Liza Jane. Now's the time for alien terror, little Liza Jane. Whoa, little Liza Jane. Whoa, little Liza Jane.
Apocalypse will surely come. Let's usher in
never sold us out. And our revenge will be no doubt. Oh, hey, oh, hey, what's heard you say? The gods of war follow me. Oh, hey, oh, hey, what's heard you say? The gods of war ride with me. Oh, hey, oh, hey, what's heard you say? Oh, hey, oh, hey, what's heard you say? Hey, 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 the gods of war ride with me. In the air, I'm on the rain. In the early morning rain. In the early morning rain. In the early morning rain. You're up. You're up. You're up. You're up. You're up. Right. Whoa. 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 Insurgent blues here. Whoa. 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 Mama, mama, don't you cry. Your radical son ain't gonna die. Mama, mama, can't you see? Look what the system did to me. I have no job, I have no home. Mexicans everywhere I roam. They stole away my Cadillac. Now I'm packing on my back.